Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction. This is Andrew. I'm here alone today. Well, kind of. I'm here with my lovely girlfriend, Madeline. She's sitting across from me wearing headphones as I talk to... Wearing headphones, listening to what I'm saying through the recorder. But she's here to kind of take the load off of me from a... awkwardly talking into a microphone alone perspective. So thank you, Madeline. Today we're going to talk about, partly with the solo episode, we are going to start doing, we're going to basically be doing this every week, but it'll be alternating between Jay and I. And this week, of course, the first week we're going to do this, this is mine. We're going to be doing mine this week. You know what I mean? Anyway, yeah, so we'll start with that. And, you know, essentially it'll be, you know, the idea is that we get to choose our own topic and talk about something for a little while. So it could be anything from the, you know, a couple of the topics I have potentially written down or, you know, a letter to my younger self. You know, it could be an interview with an addict. It could be a research topic. I know Jay was talking about doing something like that with some interesting research stuff. Anything. It can be anything, but it's just us that are talking, and a third party, not both of us. The idea is that we have limited schedules, but we want to get out more content without recording two episodes every time we go. So we're going to do this. It'll be fun. So today's topic we're going to do for the first one is I had written down the day I realized I had to change. It's a personal account of a turning point in my addiction and recovery. And I have essentially there have been I wrote down 4 days in my life where I realized that I needed to make a change. And I'm sure there are more than that. Definitely minor changes needed to be made across the way. But as major changes go, these are the four that came most to my, at least the four events that caused me to make the most change. The first one that I went, and we'll just get right into this. The first one that we are going to go over to is I have written down as the time I met the artist in the forest when I was 18. And for anybody that doesn't know what I mean by the artist, that's my perception of God. I'm going to leave it at that. So I, the event was, it was a pre-rehab thing. I had not been to rehab yet. Although at the time I was 18 and my parents were paying for like college and room and board and whatnot. And they threatened to take that all away if I didn't go to rehab because they saw me as a drug addict. That was because I was like smoking a lot of weed and doing acid and shit. I hadn't even dipped into the later stuff. Like, I hadn't done coke. I hadn't done heroin. Like, they were like, you need to go to rehab now at 18 for acid, which is like, I mean, like, I love my parents. We have a great relationship now. They'll probably listen to this at some point. But that was not a great decision on their part, if I'm being honest. I think that only made things more accessible for me. Because I was like aware of how to use drugs more efficiently now, I guess. Because it was like before it had just been alcohol every now and then, weed and acid, mushrooms, stuff like that. And now it's like, oh, people smoke crack? I didn't know that. Like I thought that was just in movies. Like that's like, so it just opened up doors to me, which I later ended up exploring. I later ended up opening those doors for myself. But I don't think that it was a great idea. at the time. Maybe later on, and we'll get to that. But so anyway, that was where I was at with that. My parents were basically like trying to, you know, proxy force me into going to rehab. So at the time I was thinking, fuck that. I'm not going to rehab. I don't need to go to rehab. I'm just going to keep selling drugs and I'll be able to pay for my apartment. That was the plan. I was just going to keep selling drugs and, you know, be fine and just like quit, drop out of school and be a drug dealer. That was the plan at age 18. Then we went on a camping trip, with a couple of friends of mine and, my ex-girlfriend at the time. And, I guess I should say girlfriend at the time. Ex-girlfriend at the time implies we had dated, you know what I mean? Anyway, we went on this camping trip and we had a bunch of LSD with us and we took it. And then, we just were tripping. And I guess I should also say that this particular time period is also pre-knowledge of, my girlfriend at the time's pregnancy. Cause I think I've gotten a little bit into this podcast is that he'll be 10 this year son who I don't think I know I'm like allowed to talk in vague points about it, but I don't think I'm legally allowed to like disclose a lot of stuff about it. But, as far as it goes, this is pre-knowledge of that. And I walked into the woods. I remember this. I walked into the woods alone on acid. I felt like there was something just like calling me. We were out in the middle of nowhere camping near some lake and in California, NorCal. And we were, I just felt something calling me into the woods. And I just walked out into the woods alone. And I felt like I got to a certain point. And I was just kind of walking. I didn't really think anything of it. And then I felt very, very viscerally, my knees were knocked out from under me and I was forced onto my knees by something. And my head felt like it was snapped up. And not a voice, but definitely a knowing told me, go to rehab. You have no idea what's about to happen. And I have always taken it to mean that was the artist telling me, you've made a mistake. You're going to have to deal with the consequences of it. Fix it. Don't be irresponsible. And so I didn't know what it meant at the time, obviously. I went back and I told my friends I think I'm going to go to rehab. And I didn't tell them anything else about why. I just told them, I think I'm going to go. And, they were like, cool, we're all tripping still. But it was like, whatever. Probably not the best thing to hear on acid, but that your buddy's going to go to rehab. Yeah, you'll drink it off. You'll feel a bit better in the morning type thing. But it was like, it was kind of just like, it was either I was going to have to keep selling drugs or I was going to just go give it all up. So it was like, I think I'm just going to give it all up. What is where I was going with that. But I've separated these events out into the event and the effect. And that was the event of it. I'll go into the effect. I decided to go to rehab right then, despite not thinking I needed to. And I mentioned this earlier, but in hindsight, I don't think this was a good idea. It just opened up later doors for later on as far as drug use. In fact, it may have even sent me down a spiraling path towards extreme addiction. But it did allow me the space to build back up a relationship with my parents, which allowed them to feel good about helping me and my ex with, the baby. As we were about to have a baby now, because we found out 3 days later, the day before I was going to rehab, that we were going to have a baby. And that was odd. Bad timing, like literally like the next day I'm going to rehab and find out she's pregnant. It's like, all right. Huh. That's a little twist I didn't expect. Yeah. Anyway, I'll get on to the next event now. We'll go with, that would be at age 22 when I was living in San Francisco. I've titled this one, Too Much San Francisco LSD. So we got some White Lightning LSD from a dealer called Clutch. That was his name. And you can, that was, rightly named. He was very quick. Clutch, the man. But we had, it was basically, this trip was about 2 hours of come up, 4 hours of seeing the yin yang symbol and visions of my death as a homeless man in San Francisco, 4 hours of the most intense waves of understanding of the world, and 2 hours of come down. That was this 12-hour trip for me. It's the fucking craziest acid I've ever had. We took a ton of it too. I don't know how much, but just quite a bit. And St. Patrick's Day was the next day, and my buddy Isaac, shout out Isaac, he was with me, and we drove to Concord, where he was living at the time, from San Francisco, which is about an hour, hour and a half, depending on traffic, east. And we drove there, and we spent the whole day drinking with people that I didn't know, which is not my favorite thing to do, especially, like, hung the fuck over on acid. So, woke up the next day after that with the most vicious hangover. Got on the train from Concord back to San Francisco, stopped in Berkeley, where I broke down over beers with my friend Connor, shout out Connor, and told him I had no idea what I was doing with my life. I was just a mess, dude. I was a complete mess. But I ended up making it back to San Francisco and then had a legit argument with my roommate at the time. And that night I decided that I needed help. I was like, I was completely a mess. And I was looking for rehabs the next day online, and I got a knock on the door from my landlord about to evict me because I had, like, threatened my roommate. And I opened the door, and immediately the first thing I said is, I know what you're here for. I'm sorry. I'm about to enroll in rehab. I have a drug problem. And they both, like, they're both look, had this insanely angry look on their face. And then it was just, like, diffused. And I was like, oh, shit. They know that I have a drug problem. And, like, they took pity on me, both of them, the roommate and the landlord. And they helped me out. They helped me figure things out. I was able to have the space in San Francisco cleaned out and my lease, like, X'd. And without, like, a bad record on my lease, just kind of figured it out. They were great for me. But the effect was that I enrolled in a rehab center in Austin, Texas, and thus began that chapter of my life. This was the first time I had admitted that I might have a problem by myself. Before this, I had always been told, you may have a drug problem, you need to watch what you're doing, stuff like that. But this was the first time I admitted that I may have a problem. So that was a big step forward. And I think that's key in every addict's journey, is that you have to admit that there's this substance, whatever it is, or substances even, as it was for me, have a hold on you and have a grip on your life and what you do with it. And that's just not really fair to even you, to anybody, that it has an effect and a grip on what you do with your day-to-day life. You should be in charge of that, not the drugs. I'll go on to the next event, though. The event itself, which is getting stabbed, I've talked about that at length, and I don't particularly enjoy talking about it again and again and again. So if you would like to hear that story, refer to episode 1. That is where I told that story at length, and if you'd like to hear it again or like to hear it for the first time, go check it out there. It is our least production value episode. It sucks, I think, honestly, compared to what we've got to now. But it's, you know, it is important where it kind of, that's where Jay and I kind of go over what our stories are. That would be episode 1 and episode 2, really, with that. Episode 3 is really where we started off on our thing we're doing now. So anyway, I'm going to get on to the effect of that, which... you know, before I had allowed myself to take responsibilities for my actions that caused that event, I had spent a lot of time blaming others either for what had happened to me or for not feeling sorry for me because of what had happened to me. But after I took charge of my own life and got rid of the victim mindset, things became a lot easier for me to forgive myself and to move past my trauma. And now I'm glad that that happened. I can honestly say I'm glad that I got stabbed in the face, which is probably nobody else has to say that. because I would not be the same person I am. I just wouldn't. I would have always been kind of a shithead that never had gotten smacked in the face. And life needs to smack some people in the face sometime. And it's not everybody. If you play by the rules of the world, you'll be fine. But if you think that you're in charge and that you own the world and you run the shit, it's going to smack you back because it runs the shit. The universe, the artist, that shit runs the shit, not you. But yeah, that's about all is all I'll talk about getting stabbed with. But the last event I have here, and I'm doing actually pretty decent here on time. The last event I have here though is quitting drinking again. I've tried quitting drinking, I think, 5 times in my life, and only one has been fully successful at the moment. And we're coming up on 2 years in about 13 days. Probably 12 days or 11 days from release of this episode, depending on when I get this out. I quit drinking on June 16th, 2023, for the final time, I should say. The first time, I don't remember the date, but it was in like 2018. But after the stabbing, I obviously was having some pretty insane trauma issues. I was having nightmares, hearing voices, disassociating. But, and it also, that also, I should say, that whole incident happened in 2019. So what happened in 2020, right? So it was like, I legitimately had a theory that I had died and that I was in hell now. That was, my whole life was like completely convinced that I was in hell currently. And I just wasn't able to see any other way out of it. I'm so shocked I didn't fucking kill myself. Because I was like, I was miserable back then. Just, I mean, hearing voices is enough to fucking kill most people. Most people go, something's fucking wrong, over with, when they start hearing voices. But then when you can't sleep, nightmares every night, every time you go to sleep for an hour and you wake up to a fucking flash of a knife in your dream, it's the most miserable thing. But that was when I found the ketamine-assisted psychotherapy treatment, which I don't recommend for everybody. I think it's a kind of, and it kind of has become, almost everybody has been doing it. I don't think I recommend it for everybody. I think I recommend it for people with legit treatment-resistant depression, as well as post-traumatic stress. And I think that those were the things that I was using it for. And I can honestly say that, you know, it is, while a dangerous time, it is addictive. It's not quite addictive the same way it is like cocaine addictive. It's not like you crave it when you don't have it. But when you do have it, it's gone, and, you know, you're just going to do the whole thing. At least that's my experience with it. But it's an impressive drug, because it allowed me, I think it allowed me to have contact with what I experience as my ego. It allowed me to come into contact with that and be like, talk to it as if I'm talking to another person. And it to talk to me back and say what it was seeing inside of me and why I was the way I was and what I needed to change the way I needed to change. So yeah, it was an interesting experience with ketamine. But getting on to what I was talking about with quitting drinking again, I was in 2023 still doing a little bit of the ketamine, not as often, but more sporadically. And on one night on a ketamine experience, I was drinking a little bit too, and I took an examination of every drug I was doing on a regular basis. And I examined them from the perspective of, what is this doing for my life? Is this positive? Is this negative? What is this doing for my life? And most of the drugs I found at least some positive for. The only one I didn't was alcohol. And when I realized this, immediately as that happened, I got like the most tremendous urge to throw up. And I went and I threw up in the toilet. And then I realized I'm doing this every morning. I'm throwing up every morning. And I was, because I was at the time, I was waking up every morning after drinking and throwing up whatever was in my stomach, even if there was nothing in my stomach, just bile. And as I was doing that at night on the ketamine, I realized, is this stomach cancer? Like, what if this is stomach cancer? Or like some sort of failure of my body. This is not a normal thing. And so I quit drinking the next day. The next day I just stopped because I realized I'm going to die. And like that night one of the things ketamine did for me was allow me to come to find love for myself and to forgive myself for the whole incident of my trauma. But I think that if I hadn't found the love for myself there, I would have just kept killing myself because I realized I was dying at that moment. And then it was like a life or death decision of just like, I can either die of this or I can quit. And so I quit on June 16th, 2023. That was the last day, or the June 15th technically was the last day I had a drink. And I don't intend to really start that up ever again. I don't think it's worth it. It doesn't appear to be based on the effect of it on me. It just seems to be poison. So that's essentially what I'm dealing with this changing episode is what we'll call it. Something along those lines, something to do with change. The days I needed to make a change. Whatever it is. But anyway, I appreciate everybody who's listened lately. Shout out you guys for listening to a podcast that is just starting up. So I guess I'll get out of here. I don't really have anything else that I've prepared, but I will say that go ahead and give us a follow on Instagram. We are at Malfunction Junction Podcast, or reach out to us at email. That is malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to compete in trauma battle as well, we're trying to find people to compete in trauma battle. Let us know if you would like to. We are in the middle of a lot of things currently. We just started the Crucible Media company up, getting that off the ground right now. We also have we're going into production for a short film that is being made in partnership with Pumpkin Hill Radio, entitled Night Cook. We're actually currently running a crowdfunding campaign for that. So if you are someone that listens to us that has money, send us $5, $10, whatever, anything. We just want to make this film and pay our crew and our cast. I'm probably the last person that's going to get paid in this situation. And I mean that. I don't have any intention of taking a dime unless there's a dime for me. Everybody else has got to get paid first. So that being said, if you're someone that can help us out, please do. We're at GoFundMe. And I will put the link to that in the description of the episode. Please help us out. It'd mean a lot. We are offering credits in the film for such occasion. Anyway, thank you very much. I'm going to get out of here. I hope everybody has a lovely day.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Get ready to shop Lowe's Black Friday Doorbuster Deals to save $150 on a 30-inch Blackstone griddle, now $299. Plus, choose a Whirlpool top load washer or Midea top freezer refrigerator for just $398. These limited-time Doorbuster Deals go fast, so get holiday ready today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid 11/28 through 12/1. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.